Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and the underemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Talk Show Initiative, and you're listening to that talk show initiative over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and Link. Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, you know that the call-in number for this show is 646-662-9448. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we also brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And you can get more information on that organization by logging in to blacksinsolar.org, blacksinsolar.org, blacksinsolar.org. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest for the day. We reached out to some folks, but you know how it goes in this business. You know the show must go on. So what we do is what we do every week. We try to bring you news that you can definitely use, and we have some very, very, very interesting topics that I've lined up for you today. And for the sake of time, we don't waste time here on this platform. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. If you wish to join us, please do. Remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing that call-in number because you'll be in our green room, and we want to bring you right on into our living room so we can get this information on how we as African Americans are going to be impacted by climate change and the public policy that is coming and has come out from your federal, state, and county legislatures. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot going on. So our topic for today, we've looked at charging ahead, rural workforce in the clean energy and EV industry. So that is the subject matter that we'll be discussing today. You can follow this by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. And we're going to also look at this particular article, which was published on October the 6th. And it was put out by the Aspen Institute, which is a think tank based here in Washington, D.C., and their slogan is Community Strategies Group, Aspen Institute. Rural communities and Native nations are critical in ensuring durable and equitable climate actions across the U.S. And recent federal activity on clean energy infrastructure, like the White House Justice 40 Initiative, is fueling conversation on how to make funding opportunities more accessible to rural communities. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before I move on, we're going to put a pin in this, and we're going to drill down on this, just what is Justice 40? We'll be doing that. Adopting new clean energy systems is a nuance and requires careful evaluation and legacies of pollution, health, and disinvestment in rural and indigenous communities. Increased funding will advance rural prosperity only if local systems level output system effort centers equitably economic development. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. This is a whole bunch of verbiage. I hail from South Carolina, from the PD area. It's known as the Greater PD area, which is composed of 10 counties. When you hit the South Carolina line, you run into my home county, which is Dillon County. And I was born in Florence and raised in Dillon, South Carolina, where I grew up as a young kid. And I can assure you that there is no economic development. I can assure you that after, in speaking with the Greater PD Economic Development Council there for that area, that African Americans, we are in, my people are in serious, serious trouble there, as we depend on folks who don't look like us to look out for our interests. And we have representatives such as Tim Scott, who may look like me in terms of melanin, but his mindset is one from another planet when you tell me there's no racism in America. So I understand how our folks are programmed to look out for themselves and no one else. And when you reach out and look at what's going on with the senatorial race in Georgia with Warnock, and as a former athlete who played ball, I don't throw Herschel Walker under the bus because he, in fact, is running for office and was an athlete and a great one at that. But because you're a great athlete don't mean you, that makes you qualified to be a state senator, especially if you've never ran any kind of organizations or have run for any form of public office, which from my understanding, Mr. Walker hadn't served in any of those capacities. But he did win the Heisman Trophy for the University of Georgia. And he is running for the Senate in the state of Georgia. And with a lot of these yahoos down their way, that's all he needed to do is be picked by COVID 45, which we know him as Donald Trump, tell him, well, I need you to carry my water for me. So that's what we're working with, ladies and gentlemen. We don't color code it. We don't try to make excuses for what is. Everybody can have their own opinion, but everybody can't have the facts. And that's what we try to deal with, factual information here. So with that being said, we're going to look at this thing about exciting opportunities and rule. So the rural America, one of the biggest emerging opportunities for rural places is the creation of a new clean energy workforce. Over half of the counties with high levels of clean energy employment are rural. A just and equitable transition means evaluating the current and future energy workforce to sustain ample labor support, equitable economic development, and environmental remedies. It also requires acknowledgement of legacies of pollution and social deterrents of health when addressing health equity in historically marginalized communities. This is some more of flowery verbiage. That's what I call it. The racism in the solar industry is at one of the highest levels of any industry, and it's not being addressed by the companies. The Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, has several years ago positioning themselves to make this racist industry palatable in terms of how it looks and smells as it relates to African Americans, when you have regulated states which are located in the deep South. That means that the utility companies control the price of energy, the transfer of energy, the connection uplinks to the energy of who can get on the grid that our public dollars pay for. Now, these are the realities of what we as African Americans face every day in this industry. So I found it very interesting to note that out of the 50 states, 35 have already submitted an infrastructure map plan or design to the Department of Transportation on where they will put their electric vehicle charging infrastructure on their federal and state highways and byways. The question becomes, how many of these electrical charging hubs will be built on African American private lands, farmers' lands, or on our HBCU campuses? Because the highways, federal highways, when they built them, a lot of them were built right through the campuses of HBCUs all over this country. And that is not my opinion. That is a fact. And we can look right here in Washington, D.C., and look at the fact that Bowie State University, which resides in Prince George's County, Maryland, located right off of Route 50, if you're traveling east toward Annapolis from the nation's capital, there was no Route 50 in 1864 when Bowie State was founded. Okay, we can be real clear on this. And when they built that campus, when they built that highway, they built it right through the property of Bowie State University. So will there be a charging infrastructure hub there for traffic to come off and charge their electric vehicles with commercial development there? I can't answer that question, ladies and gentlemen, But I can say to you that yours truly, working with Dr. Lillian Abrams, who you will be able to find an article located on our website at positivechangepc.com concerning this very dynamic black woman. And it speaks to the fact engineering sustainability with purpose and faith with Dr. Lillian Abrams. And I strongly suggest and recommend that you go to our website and click on that link and read this history of this dynamic walking legend. She's still with us, ladies and gentlemen. So we need to raise up our heroes and sheroes of this world, especially in this environmental engineering and this environmental climate change, with everything going on and with climate change. Those of who have solutions and built solutions truly has had the privilege of working with Dr. Abrams over the last 5 years, I would say, and we put together a five-year HBCU economic development plan that we've been trying to get our HBCU presidents to buy into. And that becomes a struggle within a struggle. So as you may know, if you went to an HBCU and you know something about our HBCUs, is that one of the provosts, very close friend of mine, like a second mom, told me a long time ago, Dr. Wilma Rudolph, she said that they, our presidents, have a tendency, African-American presidents, a tendency not to listen to anyone but each other. So you got to get somebody to take your idea and sell it to them and have them sell it to the rest of them, because they don't listen to nobody but each other. And I found that to be a reality within a reality that is something that's detrimental to the African-American race. And I'll lay it there and we'll put it out there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me get back to the subject at hand that we are discussing today. We're talking about charging ahead, rural workforce, and clean energy and EVs. And as I indicated, this particular article has been published by the Aspen Institute. And it went ahead and identified the Justice 40 Initiative. And we're going to drill down on what is the Justice 40 Initiative. This Justice 40 Initiative, this is a piece that was released by the White House Office on Intergovernmental Affairs. And what is Justice 40 Initiative? For the first time in our nation's history, the federal government has made its goal that 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments flow to disadvantaged communities that are marginalized, underserved, overburdened, and with pollution. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. President Biden made this historical commitment when he signed the Executive Order 14008 within days of taking office. Now remember, Executive Order 1408 was what Biden signed. What kinds of investments will fall within the Justice 40 Initiative? The categories of investments are climate change, clean energy and energy efficiency, clean transit, affordable and sustainable housing, training and workforce development, remediation and reduction of legacy pollution, and the development of critical clean water and wastewater infrastructure. How is the administration implementing the Justice 40 Initiative? Now, I'm going to give you my assessment after I finished going through what was put out by the White House. A national commitment to the environmental justice of this magnitude has never been made before. To meet the goals of the Justice 40 Initiative, the administration is transforming hundreds of federal programs across the government to ensure that disadvantaged communities receive the benefits of new and existing federal investments in these categories. Throughout the President's Inflation Reduction Act, bipartisan infrastructure law, and the American Rescue Plan, federal agencies are making historic levels of investments to advance in environmental justice. They are. We're going to drill down on that a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. The investment will help confront decades of disinvestment and disadvantaged communities and bring critical resources to communities that have been overburdened by legacy pollution and environmental hazards. Well, I question that. What types of directions has the White House provided for federal agents to achieve the goals of the Justice 40 Initiative? The task of delivering the benefits of hundreds of federal programs to communities that are marginalized, underserved, and overburdened by population requires fundamental and sweeping reforms to the very way in which the federal government as a whole operates. Last year, the White House issued the interim implementation guidance directing all federal agencies to identify and begin transforming their programs covered under the Justice 40 Initiative, which agencies are currently implementing. Here are some of the key topics addressed in the formal guidance. What is the Justice 40 Initiative? Covered federal investments include any grants or procurement spending, finance, staffing costs, or direct spending or benefits to individuals for a covered program in a Justice 40 category. What is the Justice 40 covered program? A covered program is a federal government program that falls in the scope of the Justice 40 Initiative because it includes investments that can benefit disadvantaged communities across one or more of the following areas: climate change, clean energy and efficiency, clean transit, affordable and sustainable housing, training and workforce development, remediation and reduction of legacy pollution, and the development of critical clean water and wastewater infrastructure. Existing and new programs created by Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, the bipartisan infrastructure law, and the American Rescue Plan that makes investments in any of these categories can also be considered covered by Justice 40 programs. Okay? Three key things: Inflation Reduction Act, bipartisan infrastructure law, and American Rescue Plan. Those are very, very key elements of policies that have been passed through Congress. And there's $360 billion that have been put out through the tax code to benefit these so-called communities that won't benefit. And we will address that in today's show, ladies and gentlemen. All Justice 40 covered programs are required to engage in stakeholder consultation that ensures that the community stakeholders are meaningfully involved in determining program benefits. Covered programs are also required to report data to the benefits directly to disadvantaged communities. The list of Justice 40 covered programs are being released in groups of agencies over the coming weeks. Agencies that have released their covered programs include the Army Corps of Engineers, Corporation for the National and Community Services, AmeriCorps, Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, Department of Homeland Security, Federal Emergency Management Agency, Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Interior, Department of Health and Human Resources, Department of Labor, Department of Transportation, Department of Veteran Affairs, Environmental Protection Agency, Appalachian Regional Commission, Delta Regional Authority, and the Denial Commission. The full list of Justice 40 covered programs are here, and you can click on a blue link, and that will pop up. What is the Justice 40 pilot program? The administration identified 21 federal programs to serve as Justice 40 pilot programs in an interim implementation guidance issued last year. The purpose of the Justice 40 pilot program was to accelerate implementation of the Justice 40 initiative. The 21 identified programs underwent the rapid changes, creating a roadmap for recovered to cover all programs to meet the goals of Justice 40 initiatives. By developing Justice 40 implementation plans and reporting on an expedited schedule, Justice 40 pilot programs help to provide lessons and best practices programs. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. This ain't a joke, and it ain't funny. I've just gone through this issue and raised it and beat this drum. How are communities involved in the Justice 40 initiative? Communities have been involved in shaping the Biden-Harris administration's Justice Agenda and Justice 40 since the campaign trail began. Well, I don't know who they spoke to in the African-American community, being the president of the National Association of Blacks and SOLA and having a network across this country. This is the problem with black folks. We get so excited when one of us are invited to the table, we forget that they're not the only one in the industry that they're in the industry with. So when you got one person or two people who say, oh, I'm the chosen HISC in charge, that means head Negro in charge. So darn me as the gatekeeper. I didn't stutter. This is how we get played, ladies and gentlemen, all the time. What did President Biden and the Vice President Harris hear from communities on the campaign trail? The Biden-Harris campaign heard directly from communities about how to secure environmental justice and confront decades of underinvestment. Community members made it clear. You see, this is the whole thing. When you go to these so-called meetings, they're already scripted out. Who is going to be there, going to be, you got to register, you got to go through there. They screen who they're going to allow to speak. So this platform allows you to speak and myself to speak. People who are vested every day, if they own a home, they live in a county in the United States of America, referred to as citizens and residents of those counties, and we pay taxes out of our yin-yang. We don't have a whole bunch of say because you have to go to your county first. Politics, all politics are local. So you go to your local city council person. They tell you, would you write that? Please put that in writing. And can you shoot us an email? You'll be shooting emails forever. This is what I do. See, I understand how the system works. So you follow what the system tells you to do. Once you don't get nothing done, from that, because they go from making excuses to making excuses as to why they can't get nothing done. And then another election comes around, and if they get voted out, then you get another lie from the next one up. Madness has to stop, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we speak truth to power on this program. Now, this specific article said, what did President Biden and Vice President Harris hear from communities on the campaign trail? This was 2.5 years ago. The Biden-Harris community campaign heard directly from communities about how to secure environmental justice and confront decades of underinvestment. Community members made it clear that delivering climate, clean energy, clean transit, water, and other investments would help address these interrelated issues and their associated impacts. The historically engaged Inform and Justice 40 initiatives, which seek to address the intersectional and underinvestment of environmental injustice and climate crisis. You know, we got a whole bunch of folks out here that spoke, that don't speak for nobody but themselves, who was supposed to be these stakeholders. What does the Justice 40 initiative mean to the communities? The Biden and Harris administration is implementing the Justice 40 initiative right now. The Justice 40 initiative is not a one-time investment nor a single pot of money. Rather, it is a series of changes to improve how government ensures equitable distribution of the benefits of many programs, existing and new programs, including programs created by the President Biden Inflation Reduction Act. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the American Rescue Plan are covered by the Justice 40 Initiative if they meet the eligibility requirements. There's a blue link here that will give you what those requirements are. So what are the requirements? Memorandum from the heads of the department agencies, and this is from your Shalanda D. Youngin, Acting Director of Office of Management and Budget, Brenda Malloy, Chair of the Council on Environmental Quality, Gina McCarthy, National Climate Advisor, Interim Implementation Guidance for the Justice 40 Initiative. And they go through this long spiel, ladies and gentlemen. Let me see if I can get down to where. And let me tell you how. They got 13 pages to explain to you that you poor. Poor. Okay? We want to make sure we use the right kings of English while we're on the air. We won't go Ebonics directly, but indirectly. You get it. In summary of the Interim Information Guidance for the Justice 40 Initiative, the interim guidance includes a set of actions required of agencies that manage and cover Justice 40 programs. These actions include identifying the benefits of covered programs, determining how these covered programs will distribute benefits, and calculating and reporting on reaching the 40% goal of the Justice 40 Initiative. The interim guides provide implementation of directions to an identical set of covered plans under Justice 40 Initiative. Additional guidance is forthcoming. The interim guidance applies to all entities with covered programs, including agencies with potential covered programs listed in Appendix B. Then you go down to Appendix B, and it gives you definition of disadvantaged communities, covered programs, examples of benefits of covered programs, calculating benefits, reporting benefits, pilot and maximum benefits, disadvantaged communities. All of this information, communities should be defined as either a group of individuals living in a geographical proximity to one another or geographical set of individuals set as a migrant workers or Native Americans where either the type of a group experience the common conditions. Disadvantages. Disadvantaged. Agencies should consider appropriate data that indicates screening tools to determine whether a specific community is disadvantaged based on the combination of variables that many include but are not limited to the following: low income and or high present poverty. Oh, that fits the black community, African American community. High unemployment and underemployment. That fits us. Wait a minute, I'm trying to make sure we qualify now. Racial and ethnic residential segregation, particularly where the segregation stems from discrimination by governmental agencies and linguistic isolation. That fits the African-American community. Wait a minute. High housing costs and burden of sustainable housing. Damn, we qualify on that one. We didn't miss we hit everything that qualifies black folks for being disadvantaged. I want to know, where is the money? So we understand all that. Now, we're going to try to stay as a little boy said, we're going to try to stay locked in to what we're doing, because I think this information here that I'm providing for you on these EVs and these charges on this Justice Party is important. Now, we drill down on Justice Party a little bit, and it's about 11:35. So I need to take a slight pause for the cause on this. And we're going to be right back here with our show here today on what we're doing. I hope. Yeah, here we are. We're still here. I thought I was taking us off the airways. No, we're still here. We're getting ready to take a slight pause for the cause, ladies and gentlemen, because you know, I have to always let people know who brings you this show, and it's time for me to do just that. You know, this show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, and you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know what the slogan for this show. If it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, workforce development, environmental engineering, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the high energy effects of at our historically black colleges and universities. Also to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impact of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information about that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Go over to our GoFundMe link, and you'll find information about this initiative, which you're listening to over the World Wide Web over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook and Link. Also, this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, as I've indicated, and the National Association of Blacks in SOLA. And you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blacksinsola.org. Ladies and gentlemen, as we always have to take a little time and sort of, you know, pay our bills as it relates to where we are, what we're doing at this time, it's always interesting to me that when I put these shows together, I always put them around, try to put them together and connect the dots. And I hope that we're connecting the dots on that. And as I was indicating to you right before we took that slight break, commercial break there, is that what's going on in with these agencies making all these claims is one thing, but what is happening on the ground is another. Our rural communities don't have the capacity, and a lot of them do not have the infrastructure of HR people. You don't have departments of energy in a lot of small towns. That doesn't exist. You don't. And when you have a transportation department, you may not have someone to draw up an EV infrastructure plan for a county. That funding would probably have to come from the state. And if they decide they're doing something, then they still got to report it back to the state. And if the state's not supporting these counties, such as the greater PD region where I hail from, Dillon County, Marion County, Marlborough County, based on an economic impact study that was produced with your tax dollars on the construction of a new interstate. Well, it's not even new. On an interstate, I-73, that came out of the state of Illinois and Ohio to go into Myrtle Beach to bring traffic from the Midwest. When it got to the South Carolina line, these were the last four counties that it had to go through to complete the construction. Marlborough County, Dillon County, Marion County, and Obie County, where the beach is physically located. And the issues that have developed there based on this study is that Marlborough, Dillon, and Marion are the three poorest counties in the whole state of South Carolina. And it has not grown since I left high school in 1969. Okay? I'm not making this up. No growth, no development, no investment. Now, those counties have population bases, Marlborough, Dillon, and Marion, under 35,000 in population. Oree County has a population base of 400,000. The beach is located in Oree County, and the Grand Strand brings in $10 billion a year. So you have the wealthiest county in the state of South Carolina next to three of the most impoverished counties in the state of South Carolina. Now, if you're building a federal highway, the counties have to come up with their match. Well, you got to have enough people living in those counties to do that. You don't have enough people in Marlborough, Dillon, and Marion to tax these folks to support building this interstate. So the government's got to step in. But when the state has already received $89 million to pay for the right ways through individuals' properties, and if you go down in the Dillon, Marion, and Marlborough County and ask any African American, How many African Americans do you know that got paid for the federal government to pave this highway through their property? You see how quiet I got? That's the answer you'll get. People will look at you like, have you lost your mind, Negro? These white folks ain't going to allow that down here. That is the problem. Now, I know what I'm talking about because I hail from there, and I know that highway was supposed to come through my uncle's property on the other side of Atlanta, South Carolina. And my family is very, very well known there, and our family structure is intact. So the bottom line is, I'm not making this up. So when you begin to raise issues around these issues, you know, you get a lot of pushback from folks because folks that don't look like me figure that ain't your business. Well, it is my business because I pay property taxes down there too because I own several homes. This is the problem in America. I hear all of these trumpery reports that get put out. Now, the question is, we're talking about clean air. All of these things apply, but who do you plug this information into to get anything done on a day-to-day basis? Because when you call any of these agencies today, you will not get anyone to even answer your damn phone. And everybody acts like they're doing your job and they're doing you a favor, and they really don't want to share no information. And I don't think I said anything. Or did I miss anything? Now, you know the calling number for this show is 646-668-2948. Once again, that calling number is 646-668-2948. But we're going to go and look at what these opportunities are. Because, you know, like I said, I don't want to sound like gloom and groom, doom, but damn, give me a break. Let's look at what these so-called existing opportunities are. EV charging, rural workforce for clean energy and electric vehicles. Now, when you click on this link, okay, we may be able to get through this. Rural communities and the Native Nations are critical insurance, doable, and equitable climate action across the U.S. I already read this. A just and equitable transition to clean energy workforce. Let me look at this. One of the biggest emerging opportunities for rural places is the creation of a new clean energy workforce in renewable energy generation, efficiency, advanced electric grid deployment, clean fuel, clean vehicles. Consider as of 2019, the number of clean energy jobs is doubling in the fossil fuels. I got that. The question is, how many African Americans are being hired in this renewable energy sector? I also got those figures too. We are at the bottom of the barrel. I have reached out to the Solar Industry Industry Trade Association and asked for the latest data concerning that, and nobody seems to be able to get back to me, okay? These are the things that I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen. When you ask for data to substantiate all these flowery things that these folks claim that they're doing for the African-American community, nobody wants to get back to you with the data. So we go looking for the data. There is a report put out by the Solar Foundation, which I strongly suggest and recommend that you put a phone call in to Mrs. Abigail Harper, who is the director, and ask someone over there, which I have done, if they would send you a link with the 2019 to 2021 jobs report on the solar industry. And that will tell you everything you need to know. Like I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not making any of this stuff up. The numbers for the African-American community are atrocious, can be reinforced by going to my website, and you can click on the link that will provide you with other information called the town hall. Let me close this briefly and open this other window up, because I needed more than one window that will give me access to this information through my website. So that's where I'm at right now. So what we're doing in our news and events tab, we're directing you to the articles that you need to read. Now, there is an article which speaks to just this issue of what is going on in this industry. And you'll have to click on our September 2022 link, which you'll see on our archives, and you'll have to scroll down to that specific article, and that specific article will be entitled DOE Justice Week 3, Day 3, Equity Action Town Hall and Executive Order 13985. You will be able to click on this webinar and you will be able to listen intently to what is being shared. They have the numbers, they have graphs, they have the charts that will lay out to you what I am saying. Not my opinion. This comes from the Department of Labor, the Department of Energy. Now, you also will see, honestly, everyone should watch this video. People in Florida know that this is all true, but people elsewhere would be shocked. And with that in mind, I'm going to sort of almost close this out today.
There's a huge political scandal unfolding across Florida that's almost too outrageous to believe, even for Florida.
One of the most powerful power companies in the country is candidates in Senate races across Florida.
Political committees with dark, untraceable money.
Spying on a local journalist.
Latest utility bill from Florida Power and Light is through the roof.
This scandal involves millions of dollars in corporate money, billions of dollars in corporate revenue and profit, and reaches all the way up to Governor Ron DeSantis, roping in the vast majority of the state government along with them. Florida Power and Light, or FPL, is the biggest power company in the state, serving approximately 12 million. FPL is also one of the biggest political spenders in the state, and that is how FPL has been able to gouge working-class Floridians over $1.5 billion in rate increases over the next couple of years.
Get ready to pay more for your power.
Florida Power and Light customers across Northwest Florida say they're worried about their bill.
Like right now, my bill is $569 for this month.
Wow.
That's not a late payment. That's an actual payment.
And FPL can't blame these high bills on inflation because the company also leads the nation in shareholder and executive profits. Many of Florida Power and Light's political contributions are shuffled through shady LLCs and big business PACs. But even just from the public numbers, we know that FPL has spent over $18 million on political campaigns in Florida since the 2018 election cycle. And it's probably a lot more than that. 2018 was a blue wave across the nation, but here in Florida, thanks to millions of dollars from FPL, Republicans were able to secure a stronghold on the state, putting Governor Ron DeSantis in the governor's mansion and securing a supermajority in the state legislature. FPL also spends millions on lobbying to make sure that that company gets more than its money's worth from DeSantis and the legislature.
Here's the crazy thing. Florida Power and Light isn't getting what it wants just by making millions of dollars in campaign contributions and leveraging its political connections. Investigative journalists across Florida have uncovered a web of deceptive election schemes, consultants for Florida Power and Light at the center of it all. For instance, back in 2019, FPL's CEO, a guy by the name of Eric Szilagyi, was furious with a Democratic state senator from Miami named Jose Javier Rodriguez. He was an environmentalist.
You know, I've been on consumer issues, clean energy issues about FPL my entire time in the legislature.
After Rodriguez filed yet another solar power bill that Szilagyi didn't like, Szilagyi personally emailed his lobbyists and told them to make Rodriguez's life a living hell, and that's exactly what FPL's paid consultants did. They provided the money for what's become known in Florida as the ghost candidate scandal.
Growing list of investigations into ghost candidates, a scheme to run sham candidates in three Senate races.
These FPL consultants and other Republican operatives ran hundreds of thousands of dollars through dark money organizations to advertise these random people who had been put on the ballot spoiler candidates, allowing the Republicans to swoop in and win all three races. They did this to Jose Javier Rodriguez with a guy named Alex Rodriguez.
But for Alex Rodriguez, we learned that was Alex Rodriguez. Rodriguez got 3% of the vote, 6,300-plus voters.
Jose Javier Rodriguez lost his reelection by 32 votes. Some of these same consultants were involved in yet another spoiler candidate scheme that helped Republicans win a fourth seat in 2018. That's four Senate seats in 4 years, and Republicans now control a four-seat majority in the Florida Senate.
FPL is supposed to be governed by independent experts at the Florida Public Service Commission, but guess who appoints those commissioners? Yep, Governor Ron DeSantis. So Ron DeSantis, who did not forget how the Republicans came into power, was more than happy to appoint friends of FPL to that commission. In 2021, the commission gave FPL permission to increase monthly bills by over $1.5 billion over the next couple of years. Not only that, but FPL is also allowed to charge customers more if the price of energy continues to go up. And that's exactly what's happening right now. DeSantis also signed a law that allows FPL to charge customers even more for the cost of stormproofing the infrastructure. Now, the sponsors and supporters of these pieces of legislation, they're all at the top of FPL's political contribution list. Shouldn't there be somebody who oversees all of this, somebody who can wave a red flag when it starts to get out of control? Yep, that person is supposed to be the Office of Public Counsel. Unfortunately, Governor Ron DeSantis and the state legislature, after taking millions of dollars from FPL, passed what had been a good public counsel and replaced it with a former utility lobbyist. Yep, a former utility lobbyist is the one who is in charge of holding FPL accountable.
And FPL is continuing to spend millions of dollars on this year's election in Florida, from the race for governor to legislative seats around the state. And these elections will have enormous consequences for Florida's energy and climate future.
Now, Florida Power & Light crossed the line. Some are saying the public...
Ladies and gentlemen, that's not just happening in Florida. That's happening all over the country. That's why I left the best for last. See what I'm saying? That's why you want to tune in, ladies and gentlemen, to Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Because you're going to find out that what I am saying to you is what's being done every day. Right here in the nation's capital, the Public Service Commission, Department of Energy and Environment, and the U.S. Attorney's Office is suing Pepco right now because of solar community subscriptions system under the Solar for All program here in Washington, D.C., which is supposed to be the most progressive program in the country. And on top of that, in the first rollout of this program, Department of Energy and Environment, through Neighborhoods United, which was a contractor with them, enrolled 75 D.C. residents into this program. And it said after the first 5 years, the energy credits would be transferable on to the homeowner. They've gone back and changed that pilot and that policy, and the homeowners can no longer take advantage of the energy credits that's going to be generated by systems put on their roof. And they are paying fees on their gas and water bills at a tune of $256.6 million to fund a green bank and everything else going on in the district. And Pepco put a $19,000 fee if you want to think about putting a solar system on your roof in the nation's capital. And this ain't going to be litigated or straightened out anytime soon. And I ain't making this up. So you might want to stay tuned and post it to Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America, because we bring you news that you can definitely use here on Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we say, until next week, we don't want you to meet us here. We want you to beat us back here as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we say go in peace.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Life is a song worth singing.